Welcome to the Search of Entrepreneurship and Regional Development Podcast. Each publication in our journal is a great opportunity to share significant and audacious contributions to a large audience. My guest today is Dima Dimov from the University of Bath. He recently published an article entitled Capitalizing the Future, Opportunity Capital as Symbolic Significance of an Entrepreneur's Future Venture Story. He co-authored this paper with Kutay Guneshtepe. It has been published in Entrepreneurship and Regional Development, a journal edited by Taylor and Francis. Dimo, welcome to our podcast.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Can you tell us what is the origin of your paper? Why have you decided to address this particular topic? And what is the question you aim to answer?
So the paper came out of a visit. Kutay came for a postdoc visit at University of Bath. This was, unfortunately for him, it was right in the midst of the COVID lockdowns. So when he came here and spent 6 months, it was during the time where everything was in lockdown. Everybody was working from home, but we managed to find a good way of meeting and talking about the paper. And when he came to Bath, he wanted to work on the interaction between entrepreneurs and investors, something that had to do with the pitching that entrepreneurs were doing. He was already thinking of trying to use some of the ideas of Pierre Bourdieu and social and various forms of capital around that. So this is how we started working. In fact, the project involved doing quite a lot of empirical work, looking at actual pitches, interviewing entrepreneurs and investors. And very early on in the process, it became clear that it's very difficult to actually do qualitative analysis of a pitch when you look at the pitch. One of the things that become really difficult there is that you have to begin to make the distinction between the words that are in the pitch and what the words are about. And so are you coding the words? Are you trying to capture what's behind the words? When you actually go down that line of thought, you realize when you infer from the words what is it that is being talked about, then it's not very clear whether that is your own construction or whether this is the author's original intention. And so all of a sudden, this was becoming a very interesting. You know, we had lots of discussions about how we might handle that. But along the way, it became clear that we had to write quite a lot of background to be able to set the stage for some of the analysis of the pitches and the interaction between entrepreneurs and investors. And it became clear that that background had to be so extensive that warranted actually writing a separate paper. As a standalone conceptual, in fact, quite philosophical paper. And then the real trigger for the impetus behind the paper is coming upon some ideas in linguistics around the nature of language. And it was that particular idea, one particular idea of language as a communication technology for the instruction of imagination that kind of sets the stage to exploring the idea of a future as something imaginary, and becomes really fascinating when we try to think about two speakers trying to talk about the future and what is it that happens behind that. So that was the trigger and impetus behind the paper.
What are the main contributions of this paper?
So I suppose to appreciate the contributions, we have to think about. Again, when you think about the interaction between an entrepreneur and an investor, so an entrepreneur talks to an investor and they pitch to them an idea for a venture. So we all of a sudden we have three things. There is an entrepreneur, there is the investor, and there is the pitch. But of course, there is also the setting in which they operate. So if we begin now, if you do this mental experiment in your head, you recognize that actually, if the same entrepreneur pitches something differently to an investor, obviously the outcome might be different. Then if the same pitch to the same investor is actually delivered by a different entrepreneur, you think, well, actually, the result might be different. If the same entrepreneur pitches the same idea to this to a different investor, we might get a different outcome. And then the same entrepreneur, the same pitch with the same investor, but in a different setting, this could be a time or a different context, we could have a different result. So all of a sudden, what we highlight is that we have this very complex interplay between four things. So the contribution is to begin to appreciate how these four things come together. And that would be one main contribution. Then the second one is to try to come to grips with what is it that the pitch is about, right? It is, we can say it's about a venture, it's about something. We would say it, right? It is about the pitch is about it. And what that it is very tricky, because in scholarship would say, okay, it's the thing that enables a venture to succeed. It's a something that about which the entrepreneur reasons. It's something that we describe as a venture idea, but the venture idea is not meant to be it. The venture idea stands for the it, which is that thing in the future. And so we highlight how that is something that the entrepreneur experiences in their imagination. They put it into words. The investor takes the words and project it in their imagination. And in the dialogue between entrepreneur and investor, what we can begin to see is the calibration of the two imaginations, so to speak. And then what they can have at the end is some kind of consensus, a calibrated image. And so when we have a commitment by an investor to commit to a future venture, it's a manifestation of that calibration.
What was for you the main theoretical, maybe methodological challenge or challenges in addressing such a question?
Well, one of the main things, it's not so much methodological, given that this is a conceptual paper, but one of the challenges was how to talk about this in relatively simple terms, because this becomes a heavy subject. It can become very easily heavily philosophical and overcomplicated. But, you know, we're using language. We're talking in this paper. But how do you draw the distinction between my words and what my words are about, right? This is when it comes to pitching. And this is it's very tricky, because when I say what my words are about, I'm still using words to talk about that thing. So this is where the complexity arises. But as I said earlier, one of the big help here was to, in trying to bring ideas from the outside, was this account of language by Daniel Dohr, which was about language as a technology, communication technology for the instruction of imagination. And in there was this key idea in that, and it was in a section that was talking, and it was not a speculation, but it was an account of why language could have possibly arisen. And in that section, it was talking about a situation in the evolution of humanity where person A can see a danger somewhere, and for that they need to enlist the help of person B, but person B cannot see what person A says. So person A has to have a way of communicating to person B what is it that they see, but person B cannot see. And so they can only make them imagine. And so that was the origin of Angus. And the immediate analogy with entrepreneurship, I think, is clear. An entrepreneur sees the future. They want to talk to an investor about it. But of course, the investor cannot see the future that an entrepreneur sees. And hence, language becomes the means through which that is enabled.
During your research journey, what was your biggest surprise or the most counterintuitive result?
This is a good question. The most counterintuitive result, or the most interesting result in that sense to us, has to do with how we can relate our work to existing work within entrepreneurship, and particularly discussions around opportunities, but also discussions around the existing stream of entrepreneurial communication. So within the space of entrepreneurial opportunity, there is this sense that we talk about future ventures as a you know, as the content of an idea, so to speak, but it kind of overlooks the fact that this is something that needs to be communicated and put in language. So there's that distinction is very difficult to make. On the opposite side, we have within entrepreneurial communication, there is a lot of focus on stories. And the focus there is on the words that entrepreneurs use. But again, what is overlooked there is any discussion of what those stories are about, right? So again, we have distinction between the story and what it is about. And so the counterintuitive idea is to express or to capture the idea that a story can have symbolic significance by virtue of not only what the story is about, but also by virtue of who tells the story and by virtue of who listens to the story. And they're able to infer that significance from who the speaker is and how they construct the story, what the story is about, or the future venture in their imagination. So go back to the beginning. It's that kind of a holistic configuration between speaker, listener, story, and context, or entrepreneur, investor, pitch, and context.
What are the main implications of your work for entrepreneurs, managers, policymakers, practitioners in general?
So the main implications of this work is in trying to understand, in looking at communication, persuasion, or anything that relates to future phenomena when we try to convince others. And in the process of communication, we begin to focus not only on how we describe and how we talk about things. We need to be mindful that the language we use is going to be used by others to recreate things in their imagination. So that's aspect number one. The second one is to recognize that communication happens in a particular symbolic context. So this is the insights in the paper that come from the ideas of Bourdieu. There's a lot of cultural capital around this. There's a lot of meaning that we can become mindful of, and then we can begin to think about the words that we use as, you know, how are they going to connect with the symbolic landscape to give us the outcome that we want. This work also allows us to take a step, particularly when I think about literature and communication, where the focus is often being on the concept of legitimacy. Illegitimacy is this general perception of something being appropriate or desirable. And what we do with our work is we're able to close the gap between the desirable and the desired. Because at the end of the day, something being desirable doesn't mean that it's going to be desired, right? And closing that gap, desired, is about this extra commitment. And that commitment, the impetus behind that commitment is really in this symbolic value. And this is what we call opportunity capital. How is it that at the end, when we exchange, if you think about what is exchanged in any investor-entrepreneur interaction, is we have the investor's funds or money on one end, which is something that's very weighty or heavy because of the alternative uses that he has. You know, money has value. And what we have on the other end is a combination of words as a gateway to understanding what the words are about, but also the entrepreneur's commitment to making that imaginary future real. So how is it that, you know, the counterparty to the money becomes weighty as well? And this is where the symbolic value becomes really, really paramount. And that's something that we hope we brought attention to. It's something with which we can engage more explicitly.
Thanks a lot, Dimo, for participating to our show and presenting your paper entitled Capitalizing the Future, Opportunity Capital as Symbolic Significance of an Entrepreneur's Future Venture Story. All our podcasts are available on entrepreneurship-ed.com and on the main podcast platforms.
Thank you.